Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, glittering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one shot a weekend of training to get that bag.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/policeacademypodcast. With over 180,000 titles to choose from, you will have no trouble finding an audiobook to get hooked on. Your membership gets you one free book a month and a 30% discount on any additional purchases. And once you buy a book, and this is what I love about Audible, it's yours for life. That is unless you don't like it, in which case you can always return it for a different one. So go check them out by following the link in the show notes or going to audibletrial.com/policeacademypodcast. Hey guys, welcome back to Police Academy Podcast. This episode is all about the Police Academy, the real Police Academy. In fact, Kristen Ware is with the Wilmington, North Carolina Police Department, and he is in the academy as we speak. Kristen has actually been doing vlogs, about one a week, of his experience in the police academy and sending those to me. So I will actually have a mini documentary or a big vlog, basically, from Kristen when he's all the way through the academy, and that will be on the YouTube page. But I decided to do this interview because there are a few of you who I know want to be police officers or want to know what to expect, what to prepare for, and obviously there are plenty of you who just want to know more about what it's like to be a cop, and this is part of that experience. In fact, a really important part, because that is where your brain goes from normal to not normal, from civilian to cop. And Kristen is in the middle of that transition, and I thought it would be really cool to have him on the show and talk about how his perspective is changing, things that he didn't expect, what was the most challenging, what's been the most fun, all that kind of stuff. And we get into all of that in this interview. And we have a live YouTube audience asking questions as well. They did distract me a little bit. So if you hear some flow issues in the interview, like I'm not paying attention or my brain's not working, it's because I'm reading comments. So I apologize for that, but they did ask some good questions. So I'm glad they were there. If you were watching the live video or you've seen it since it's been posted, then you've already listened to this. So go do something else with your time. I am not worth listening to twice. At least I don't think so. But if you haven't, enjoy the show. Oh, and one last thing before I let you guys go. I am going to start doing live streams. I think I'm 85% sure. Once a week, and I welcome your input, the YouTube audience, as to what day and what time of the week works for you. If you're interested in watching those, just basically having an open door policy for questions for a cop. I will have topics ahead of time, but also just open it up to discussion. So if you have a preference, if you're interested in that, shoot me an email, policeacademypodcast@gmail.com, and let me know what works best for you. And if you have ideas for that, I'm open to that too. So, okay, go. Explain real quick why you decided to become an officer versus staying with education.
It's kind of a joke that I tell my wife and several friends that, you know, I sit in a classroom all day waiting for somebody to come into my classroom and shoot it up, because that's happened a lot in the recent past. Mm-hmm. But I said, you know, now at least I have a gun on myself to be able to defend myself and others. Because the first day of class, I would always come in and say, okay, I'm Mr. Ware. This is for real. There's two doors in the classroom. If a shooter comes in that door, you run out that door. I run toward him. If the shooter comes in that door, you run out that door and I run toward him. And they're like, you run toward him? I said, yes, I'm here to protect you, whether or not I have a gun. And so that kind of was a sobering thought, you know, thinking, hey, at least I'll be able to be trained and defend myself and others this time.
Okay. So that's an interesting concept. And it is something that really, I didn't think we would really go here, but since you brought it up, that is something that bothers me a lot with kids that are getting to that point where, you know, they're going to get into public schools and knowing that they're not protected. That's a big issue we have in this country. We're kind of in the middle where we've got a country full of guns, but we're also trying to legislate against that. And we're doing so in some pretty non-intelligent ways by creating safe zones where people that want to harm people, you know, can do so at will. So, that I understand that how that could be really disconcerting for you, because legally, I assume in North Carolina, just like anywhere else, you cannot have a gun as a teacher, right?
This was in Tennessee that I was teaching.
That was in Tennessee.
And they did actually pass the legislation to where teachers could carry, but it had to be approved by the Board of Education and then training and all that. And none of that happened in my district. So,
okay.
I was kind of out of luck there.
That's better than it is here. At least they give you the option. Here, it's not even an option. It's just, no, you can't have a gun in a school unless you're a uniformed officer. By the way, I'm wearing my sweater from the academy that we worked out in. Nice. Just for kicks and giggles, but I'm going to take it off because I'm really hot. while I do that, answer this. And it probably one of your first emails that you sent me, you asked, what should I expect from the academy? You know, you sent me an email and said, I'm a teacher. I'm going into law enforcement. I'm about to go to the academy. What can I expect? Give me a heads up here. Try to give me an edge. And so I'm going to kick that back to you. What did you expect? We'll start with that. What did you expect going into it?
Well, I'll tell you this. The first week I got there, there was a lot of people that were teachers, you know, of the academy, and, you know, people that are in administration in charge of the academy telling me, oh, you'll be fine. I have a master's degree. So they were like, oh, you'll be fine. You're well educated. You won't have a problem getting through this, you know? And I was like, okay. And so I expected it to be, I guess, not easy, but doable, because they told us that the curriculum is based on what an 18-year-old would be able to do right out of high school. And so it's kind of a basic, I mean, the name of it is basic law enforcement training. So it's fairly basic on the level. And I go into things, you know, whenever you're getting a master's degree, you're planning on writing papers that are long and drawn out. And I had a lot of trouble with, you know, report writing because I'm trying to be too extravagant. And they're telling me, keep it simple, just the facts, just a sentence here and there, you know. Right. So I had a lot of trouble with that and understanding how to, it sounds bad when I say it, but how to dumb it down, because I was trying to be too over the top with it.
No, for me, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've gone both ways now. When I was in the academy, I had the same problem. There's no commas and complex sentences. It's very broken, and it's very low level reading. Very simple. It is not eloquent at all. Sounds terrible. If you're reading it to your kid, like a story, they would lose attention in about two sentences, right? Like it's really dry. It's just the facts. And yeah, I had the same experience. And now leaving law enforcement and actually writing again as a writer, I have had, it was really difficult at first. I'm still trying to overcome that long period of my life where I was forced to write like an idiot, to be honest. And so I'm kind of like, it kind of stunted my writing ability, you know?
Yeah.
I'm still struggling with that. I mean, at least that's my excuse.
And I said something, we were doing an interview class, and I said, tell me the events that transpired this afternoon. And they said, hold up, tell them to say, tell me what happened. Because yeah. I'm like, don't use big words, just don't do it. And I was like, okay,
transpired is much too large.
Random words like that. And I was like, well, okay. Cause I mean, I'm coming from the classroom using words like that for my kids, saying, hey, if you talk with a big vocabulary, people will be impressed. And I was like, okay. And now I have to in my mind, low level, dumb it down.
All right. Sorry, I lost my notes here. Anything else that has stood out to you aside from the writing stuff?
Yeah, just the experience of, I guess, making the transition from civilian to police officer. I'm seeing things in a little bit of a different light, and I didn't realize it. Like, when you see a police officer on the street, you don't realize the techniques and what they're doing every second of the time that they're talking to you and paying attention and writing things down in a notebook and interviewing you and how their stance and where their hands are and stuff like that. You just don't think about it until you are training to do it. Right. You know, body position is everything. Making sure that you always have the advantage, making sure that your weapon is in a certain position, making sure that your body's in a certain position. You just don't think about things like that when you're going, when you're just talking to a regular police officer, until you're actually going through the training for it. And so the perception of that was a little bit different, but also making the transition in my mind to it's a mental transition of I'm going from normal everyday citizen without a care in the world. You know, even though I had a concealed carry permit and I carried and I was a little bit more vigilant than normal citizen, you're hyper-vigilant whenever you're in the uniform, because that uniform itself makes you a target. So you have to really understand that maybe not everybody's out to get you, but everybody could be out to get you. So you have to be aware of your surroundings a whole lot more.
Right.
Understanding this more.
Yeah. A lot of good points there. I think civilians oftentimes have no idea what an officer is doing, even though they're standing there talking to them right then, right? Like, they don't know why, or don't even notice that you're blading a certain way, or the things that you're listening to, or the questions that you're asking. And this is where I think there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of frustration on the civilian side, is like, officers do tend to ask pointed questions for a reason. And civilians feel like, well, you're trying to catch me doing something. You're trying to get me in trouble. And that's just what cops do. I mean, their job is to investigate, to peel back the onion. Everyone has things going on. And some guys don't turn that off well in casual civilian conversations. And that makes officers sometimes unrelatable. And then your comment about being hypervigilant, I think that is something that would concern a lot of civilians right now because of the national conversation. I think there's an impression that's been created out there that police are just trained to not trust anyone, and the impression is that that police overreact and take things way too far, way too fast sometimes, instead of trying to, the word that people often use is de-escalate. So can you speak to that as far as what your experience is there? Because you are coming from the civilian world, although you already were much more vigilant than a typical civilian. How have they taught you to be vigilant? But how well have they balanced that with, you also have to make sure you are identifying threats accurately before you, react or overreact?
Well, a couple of points. We had some vice guys come in to do confidential informant interviews. We were interviewing them and getting information from them as an acting CI. You know, it's kind of like a scenario that was set up. And at the end, when we were done, we had done our interviews, they came into the classroom and started talking to us. And they said, one of the guys said something that was like, we all just sat there and went, huh? He said, I like all of you and I think that you're going to do well. But when I came into this classroom today, I had a plan to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And walk out of the room. And I was like, what? Like, it just shocked me when he said that. And I know he didn't mean like, hey, I'm going to kill everybody. But it's, I have an escape route. I have a plan. And it's just a mindset that you have to develop of, if things go south, I'm going to get out of here alive and go home. And I get that, you know, like it made sense after he said it. He was just one of the nicest guys that I've ever talked to. But when he said that, it was like really shocking and surprising that people don't normally hear that kind of thing coming from a regular person's mouth. So, you know, that was a little bit of a shock.
Right.
But even things like that, you know, just they're telling us to make sure that, you know, we have a hobby. I've been told that about 15,000 times. Make sure you have a hobby. Make sure you have an outlet, something that you can release this tension from your day, because you're grabbing all the baggage that you go through with, you know, this person's been shot, this person got killed, this person got raped, this person, whatever. The things that you deal with on a regular basis, all the calls, the accidents that you see, somebody's injured and may not make it through the night, you know, and then you come home to your family and everything's normal. And it's like, you still have all that in your head and your eyes.
Yeah. It's like, you watch any of these war movies, recent one, American Sniper, Chris Kyle's story, you know, these guys go to war and they are in war, and they come back and they've just been in a completely different world where everyone's trying to kill you, and they've done and seen these crazy, terrible things that they never thought, at least even still don't think, should ever happen. And life back here is just easy peasy. Everyone acts like there's nothing going on, not paying attention to what's going on overseas, whatever. And I think law enforcement officers experience much the same thing, because they know what's going on behind those doors. I remember when I got my job with my police department, I lived outside the city, and then about, about a year in, we moved into the city. So we're looking for a place to live. And actually, we had looked beforehand. And you drive through these neighborhoods, and it's like, oh, this would be a good neighborhood. This would be a good neighborhood. And then you work there for a year or two, and it's like, nope, I'm not living there. There aren't any neighborhoods left, because even the nice neighborhoods, there's crazy stuff going on. And the outside might look nice and pretty. There are some things you can look at a house and go, okay, what's going on behind closed doors would surprise people. But you walk inside these houses and it's like, there's no carpet. They're torn up, holes in the walls, you know, they're trashed or whatever. Like there's a world that civilians don't know about unless they're the ones the police are dealing with all the time. Most civilians have no idea what is going on around them on a daily basis, or what's going on in their neighborhood, you know, all the time. So it's very eye-opening.
And I have to say this too. In my firearms class today, we talked about statistics of officer-involved shootings. Mm. And the instructor says to us, about 20% of you in this class will probably be involved, you know, statistically, in an officer-involved shooting. And then he said, wait a second, I probably should say 40%, given what's going on now. And he's like, you know, up the percentage because of all the shootings that have been happening. So, you know, whether it be an officer shooting or, you know, somebody shooting at an officer-involved shooting of some type. So it's real. It's reality. It's like what you're saying. It's kind of like a war zone here. And that PTSD is really a real thing now, even more so than it was before.
Right. Yeah. And it's scary to think how the environment right now in the media and just in this country with the police. Hold on, my phone's trying to talk to me for some reason. How that's going to affect, not only, it goes both ways. You look at like the message of Black Lives Matter. How does that cause young Black men to react to law enforcement presence? And that has a huge impact on the outcome of that event, but also how is it going to, just this environment in general, going to impact training and the mindset of officers? Are we going to move toward a under siege, this is a war and we need to bunker down type training? I think this depends on each individual academy. Or is it, no, we need to humanize our officers and reach out and focus even more and push harder at with community policing, that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But do you feel like they've done, how much percentage wise do you think they've focused on the be vigilant and stay alive versus your job is to serve and protect and be part of the community?
Well, I can speak to that in two different ways, because the community college part of it, the instructors and everything, have really gone to training everybody in terms of practical application on the street and saying, this is what you'll be dealing with. I know it says this in the book, but this is what's really going to happen. And so they kind of, you know, they do a really good job of giving us a real life picture of it. But in terms of the community policing, when I got hired, especially at Wilmington, that was the big question. I interviewed with the assistant chief before. That was like the last interview before my polygraph. And he was really insistent on, from the agency, what is community policing? What's your definition of it? How does it apply to you? How does it apply to this agency? How do you put it into practice? And I had heard the term before, but I wasn't really prepared to answer that question.
Yeah.
So I just kind of guessed, and apparently I guessed right. And I was like, going into the community, talking to people and making those connections before you arrest them, because, you know, like kind of getting a relationship with the people on your beat. So, you know, these are the people that I'm dealing with every day, so that right. Whenever you go to arrest them or arrest a friend of theirs, they're not going to provide any interference or anything like that. You know, they'll understand you're just doing your job. Right. And so it kind of, you know, we've had many, many conversations about community policing, but that's a huge deal with the Wilmington Police Department.
That's good to hear. We have a few people watching and commenting. Someone told you to, I assume this is directed at you because I'm not in the academy. They said 25 burpees. So anytime during the interview, you want to hit those up.
I'll have you know that I did 155 push-ups tonight.
Wow, that's pretty good. All right, so there's a question in here. So up here in Connecticut, all town police go through a state police run academy, same as the state PD, state patrol goes through. And this is from Caitlin. She's asking, so do all... All right, I want to make sure I have this question right. So all Connecticut PDs go through the same training. That's what I'm getting at. Okay, so I don't know. I thought it was a question, but I'm not seeing it. If you're asking anything, Caitlin, I assume you're asking, is that the same everywhere else you go? And the answer is no. I can speak for Nebraska, and I'll let Kristen speak for North Carolina, but Nebraska... You basically have three large academies that do their own, and that is the State Patrol. They do their own academy at the State Academy, which is in Grand Island. Then you have Lincoln Police and Omaha Police. They do their own academies. They're the two largest in the state. And then everyone else in the state goes to the same place as State Patrol. It's at that academy facility, but it's a separate academy. I've heard the horror stories from other academy classes who were there at the same time State Patrol was, and how militarized the State Patrol Academy is versus ours, which was not at all. But that's how it works in Nebraska. Kristen, obviously, you are at the community college with your, you said, 14 of your officers? And then a bunch of other agencies?
24 total in the class, 14 of them from WPD.
Okay.
The rest are from either not hired or from other agencies.
Okay. So how many agencies potentially could your academy service?
A lot. Because where I'm located is right at the beach. So you have the city of Wilmington, right across the bridge is Wrightsville Beach. And then you have Carolina Beach, Curry Beach, and there's several other beach departments.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the county sheriff. And then you've got... the North Carolina Highway Patrol, and of course the SBI and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's pretty much the same what you're talking about. The Highway Patrol has their own academy in Raleigh. And it's like a on-site barracks military type style thing where it's like 32 weeks or something. It's something insane.
Right.
And I actually looked into that before I did WPD, and I was like, yeah, I don't really want to be away from home that long.
Whose was that?
The Highway Patrol.
Yeah.
And they're, I mean, you only get to go on the weekends on home, and it's 2.5 hours from here, so I didn't want to deal with that.
Yep. Yeah, so that was something I wanted to ask you. Do you have to stay at the academy during the week, or you can go home?
No, it's just the college is like 2 miles down the road from my house.
Okay.
So
that's
we even take
awesome.
lunch and everything. So
Awesome. That's
pretty convenient.
our academy. We could go home. No, actually, I don't know if you could. I take that back. I'm not sure you could go home. It was like 1 hour and 45 minutes away. So we couldn't anyways. We went home on the weekends, but I'm not sure you could. I think you had to stay on campus during the week. But the same was true for our state patrol. They're stuck there. And I think you actually have to stay there even on weekends initially, if the rumors are correct. I'd have to verify that with a trooper, but it's interesting how the state patrols tend to be much more militaristic. I'm not sure exactly where that trend comes from. They are definitely they have a different mentality, a different purpose, but it's interesting. I'd like to find out if that is true for all state patrols or which ones have moved on from that to more, I don't want to say modern, but away from that militaristic style.
I have a little bit of a different situation too, because the Wilmington PD people, we're hired by the city of Wilmington already to go through the academy. And so they're paying us, salary and benefits. So we pretty much have to work a 40-hour work week for them. So if we have like 30 hours of class time at Cape Fear Community College, then we have to make up that other 10 hours at the station doing something. So we'll be, going to the station 2 or 3 hours a day to make something up. Sometimes they'll give us 10 code tests. They'll, make sure that our uniform's inspected, and we'll go out to the gym at the station and work out as a group, that kind of thing. So whatever it takes to get our 40 hours a week in is what we do.
Okay.
We have dual obligations.
Okay, for the record, it's not Caitlin, it's Pat. Pat's on Caitlin's YouTube account. we got a question, and I have an outline here, but I'll address questions as they come in. Marcus asks, does the police department screen new candidates on who may be a possible racist, or who may be possible racists? Your comments on that, Kristen, you just went through the hiring process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They ask so many questions. I never thought the hiring process was going to be this involved. But I mean, they ask questions upon questions. I even had them ask me during my interview before the polygraph 7 questions in a row that were exactly the same question, just to see if I would answer it the same way every time. And I was like, I even giggled at one point. I was like, you just asked me that. Oh, wait, never mind. I'll just answer it. And I was like, you're doing this for a reason. But yeah, I mean, anything from, I mean, just random off the wall stuff. Like, have you ever looked at child porn? Have you ever sold drugs? Have you, like just things you wouldn't even think about as a normal person, but they ask you everything. So yes, they screen very well.
That falls right in line with my experience. I felt violated by the time I got through all of the questions, the psychological exam, and especially the polygraph. That was the most awkward experience of my life. I really have nothing to hide, but I'm also very just self-conscious about, and I guess integrity is what it comes down to, just all telling the truth no matter how small it is. So they asked me a question. This was the only one that came up as iffy. They have, like, you might remember the terms. It's been a while for me, but they can basically say, yes, it's clear that you're hiding something or lying. It's indeterminate, it's somewhere in the middle, or they feel like you're telling the truth. And the one that came up in the middle for me was, have you ever stolen anything? And I told them about this bouncy ball I stole when I was like a little kid, right? So they're like, okay, aside from what you told us, have you ever stolen anything? I said no. But when I was when they asked that question, I was thinking about like when I was a teenager into college, but mostly like in high school when like what was it called, Napster, and those music programs came out where you could like jack people's music, yes, and over the internet, and I did that. I had a ton of music because of that. So that's not what they're looking for. Like, right. But technically it's theft. I didn't pay for it. So I answered no, but like, as I answered that, that was in my head and it showed up on the polygraph. And so afterwards they're like, well, what was going on here? We know something was going on. What's the deal? So I told them and they were just like, really? Are you serious? And I'm like, that's what you were concerned about? But extremely uncomfortable experience.
Yeah, I had the opposite experience in my polygraph. It only took me 45 minutes to complete it. I walked in there and she would ask me these questions. I had never smoked pot. I had never done drugs. I had never, like, I was a good kid and I didn't do anything wrong. And so she asked me all these questions. She's like, oh, well, this will be easy because you haven't done anything. I was like, well, yeah. So, and then when I had to lie, like, she's like, okay, these numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you have to tell me that this is a 3, even though it's a 5. And I'm like, I can't do it. It was
so funny. That's awesome. There's a comment in here about going to the academy after you're hired versus you can go ahead of time. For us, you can go get your Nebraska certification on your own and pay your own way. If you haven't been hired anywhere or whatever, you just want to add that to your resume, basically, you can do that in Nebraska. I assume that is similar in other areas, but and it's definitely a good thing to do. It's basically like paying for a short college degree, and it's something that really says, hey, I'm serious about this. I went and paid my own way at the academy. We had a couple with us. Is that true for you? Can you guys do that at yours?
I don't know how it is in other states. I know in North Carolina, if you're not hired when you graduate the academy, you have 1 year to get hired, or you have to go through the entire thing again. Wow. So if you don't have a hire date or anything with an agency, then you're out of luck after a year, and you just have to go through the whole deal again.
I think that's true for us too. And so that's, there's a risk taken there.
There's no way that I would want to do that because it's way too much work.
Yeah.
You know, to not get something out of it. I mean, seriously. And there are advantages and disadvantages of being hired. Like I said, I have to put 40 hours a week in no matter what, even if we have like 20 hours of class. Mm-hmm. So the other people from Cape Fear that aren't hired, they're just like, hey, I have a long weekend. See you later. And I'm like, I have to work till 5 today.
Yeah. So, you know,
it's like this week we're putting in extra hours so we can have a day off at Thanksgiving, like before Thanksgiving. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just, it's a give and take, but I'm not going to complain at all because I'm getting paid. So I'm really not.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's definitely better to go into the academy working for a police department or your agency.
No, I don't have to look for a job is really nice.
Exactly. Yep. You're not worried about that. You've already got it. Just get through the academy and you're set. But for the guys in my class, at least that didn't have an employer yet, I think they all did by the time they left. So that was a good sign.
Graduation.
What's that?
A lot of times they'll be hired right after graduation just because the agency doesn't have to spend any money on putting them through the academy.
Right.
So it's a pretty easy hire.
Right. And if I remember right, our agency doesn't pay for us. It's actually funded by the state, and that each agency that sends officers there has so many slots per academy, and it's almost completely funded by the state, so it doesn't cost our department anything or any of the departments. How often does Marcus is asking, how often does he communicate with African Americans and Hispanics?
I've got 4 or 5 African Americans in the class with me. Mm-hmm. Three of which are hired with Wilmington. So I'm pretty close with them. There's one Hispanic guy that's in the class too, also with Wilmington. Other than that, I mean, my personal life, I have friends of all races. I, I communicate with them just like I do with everybody else. It's no different.
Right. Okay. So before we started, we kind of talked about how, and this is why this show is called Police Academy. I've kind of talked about this before, and if you have jumped in since we started, feel free to ask questions. We're just talking about the academy process. Kristen is in the academy right now. That's why he's on the show. So I named this platform Police Academy because it's about helping mostly civilians understand how cops think, and that not just perspective, but just kind of lending a view into inside of cop brain. So let's talk briefly about what it's been like changing from thinking like a civilian to changing like an officer. And maybe, you know, if you can give some examples of that, just touch on that briefly.
I can give you that story that I told you the other day, that nobody else has heard, but when I was doing the practical for domestic violence, we had to walk into a scenario where there was a man and a woman in a room. She was showing signs that she had been beaten. She had blood on her face and stuff. And he was sitting there with at a table with alcohol bottles and like a firearm sitting there. So me and my partner, we were doing cover and contact officer techniques where one person goes in and initiates the contact. The other one makes sure that the scene is safe. And so, you know, I was the cover officer, but I grabbed the firearm off the table, cleared the room of any weapons and stuff like that. And he was doing the interviewing at that time. I was keeping the husband occupied and he was talking to the wife. When he finished talking to the wife, then we swapped places and I started talking to her and he started talking to him. And he realized that it was, you know, time to make the arrest of this gentleman. And so when he went to arrest him, he went to pat him down. And when he did, the guy turned away and looked like he was going to draw a firearm. And I went to, of course, we have plastic guns that aren't functional. They're bright orange, you know, so that they're safe.
Right.
So I went to draw my firearm from my holster and I like almost like panicked, like I froze. And I just sat there because I told you before about my analytical side. I was thinking too much instead of actually reacting. And when I went to draw my firearm, I stopped. And he has kind of like put him in the handcuff position, but the guy turned around and I saw this like fake Derringer fall to the ground. And I was like, oh my gosh, if this were real, I would have been dead. Mm-hmm. And it was like a big holy cow moment of, you know, this is for real. Like if this were an actual real situation, I can't stop and freeze. I have to actually react. So that was a really eye-opening experience, you know, to understand. And that's just kind of an example of how things have changed for me, changing a mindset of I have to be very tactically minded. I have to really make sure that I'm, you know, scanning the scene instead of just walking in happy-go-lucky and just whatever happens, happens. You know, that's going to get you killed if you do that.
Right.
So it was a really sobering thought.
You're right. So that was something that was very weird for me at first. This idea that when you walk into a scene, you have to, if you want to stay alive for very long as a cop. And people talk about, you know, well, you know, there are other professions where people die more often. Well, the reason cops don't die at much higher rates is because they're trained very well in most cases to not die, right? Like the reason why cops walk into the room and control everyone in the room. And when people don't obey those directives from the officers, bad things happen, right? People get arrested for obstructing because they're not listening to the officer, whatever. But the reason why the officers are giving those commands to, you know, sit there, cross your legs, don't move, whatever, is because that's how they stay alive. They don't know the people. They don't know what's in the room or in that area. And that was a huge change for me going from normal civilian to now you're going to just be thrown into these situations in the real world where you don't have time to make a mistake or second guess yourself. You have to make the right decision or you or someone else might die. And the realization that you had to control the environment around you That was probably one of the biggest changes for me, at least. It's good that you brought that up. How has your perspective changed in any other ways that you can think of? Just perspective. Like, that's a good example, but have you noticed if you're out in the public with your wife or kids, and this is something you might notice more after you get out on the road, but any other ways that you notice that those, the way that you process the world around you is changing?
I guess it's kind of trivial, but like, I all the time see people breaking the law on the road.
I'm driving
and I'm like, they didn't signal, they turned left on red, you know, and I'm like, my wife is like, shut up. So I don't say anything about it. Like, I just kind of keep it to myself. But I mean, stupid stuff like that. But otherwise, I don't know if I've really had enough experience out there yet. I think that's really going to come in field training, because I go into places and look at people and I say, I wonder if I would arrest somebody like that. I wonder if that person's done anything, you know, to be arrested for. And I kind of scan. But at this point, you know, I'm not afraid to go anywhere because nobody knows that I'm a cop and nobody knows that I've arrested anybody yet. I think it'll change whenever I get to that point where I see somebody in public and say, oh crap, I arrested that person for drugs.
Right.
You know, they might recognize me and I have my wife here and I want to make sure we're protected. You know, like, what if they get pissed off? You know, like, I don't know how I'm going to react to that. I haven't dealt with it yet. I've had friends who have been officers for years who have told me that they can't go to certain places now. They won't go to certain restaurants because they know who the cooks are and they know, you know, they won't eat there. And I'm just like, I don't want to be that guy, but I don't know if I will be that guy. So I can't say that yet.
I can confidently say you will be that guy. You will. I was just talking to a good friend of mine this weekend about how when you fill out your, we call them field interview cards, you make contact with somebody in the field. And you're going to identify them. We would write all their name, date of birth, address, phone number, and place of work on this card. And I mean, you knew where most of the people that you dealt with all the time worked. Lots of Wendy's, Arby's, McDonald's, Taco Bell, Burger King, that kind of stuff. The real like cheap fast food. So there were very few sacred restaurants. Aside from the ones that made food in front of you, like Subway, Chipotle, that kind of stuff, very few. Chick-fil-A was one for a while where I hadn't arrested anyone or dealt with anyone that was hateful, let's say, toward the police. That was Chick-fil-A and Village Inn. We would eat at Village Inn every other Sunday morning when I was on shift that day. And both of those fell off the wagon at some point in my career where I arrested somebody that worked there and I'd be driving to jail and where do you work? Chick-fil-A. Dang it. Not eating lunch there anymore. So you have to at times, but it definitely gets to you. It's like, what's in this food? You know, right. If you can't see it made, can you trust it?
Yeah.
I don't know. So do you live in the community that you're going to serve in?
I do. I live right outside the city limits, but I mean, it's close enough to where it might as well be. And of course, our jurisdiction goes 1 mile outside as the crow flies.
Okay.
So technically, I'm sort of still inside the limit of the city.
So you're going to be shopping and eating off duty in the same place that you work?
Yes. And my wife works in the city. So if I ever meet her for lunch or anything, we'll be in the city.
Right.
Now, it depends on what district I work, because it's divided up into six districts, but I'm going to be working all of them at some point.
Yeah. And it's different for everybody. There are guys that live in their communities that they serve in and have no problem with it. For me, my family comes first regardless. I can still be a good officer and serve my community and connect with that community but not live in it.
Yeah.
You have to be intentional about it. I know there's an argument for living in your community that you serve in, just because it makes it more personal. It is your community, you know, on and off duty. And that is how it was for me for the first 2 to 3 years, and we moved. And it wasn't because, only because of these issues. It had to do with where our kids were going to go to school and that kind of stuff. But it was, I did not like living in the community that I served in for the same reasons we talked about at the beginning, where you drive down the street and you can't go a block without going, you know, this happened there, I arrested that guy there, and you can't go to Walmart or Target or the rest, you know, Chick-fil-A, Chipotle, whatever, off duty and not see someone that you've arrested. Right. And for me, being with my family when I'm off duty, I want to be able to relax a little bit at some point in my life. And yeah, it's hard to do when you're surrounded by people that may really, really not like you. So that was a struggle for me, but some people do it just fine.
To a certain extent, as a teacher, I dealt with that. It wasn't in the same capacity, but, you know, like my wife and I were both teachers in Tennessee, and she worked in Georgia and I worked in Tennessee. Well, we lived in the town that I taught in, so I saw people all the time at the stores and everything, in restaurants and whatever. But it's different as a teacher because you're not out there arresting people and questioning people and all that. So, I mean, right, I dealt with people in the public, and it is annoying on one hand to walk into a store and you can't go anywhere because everybody wants to talk to you. Mm-hmm. I guess it's the opposite as a cop. Nobody wants to talk.
It's the opposite. Yeah.
So I'm okay with that.
And then now you're just going to have both. You're going to have all the old people that used to know you wanting to talk to you, and then everyone else giving you the stank eye.
Well, I used to live in Tennessee, so I'm not there anymore. So I don't have to worry about those people. I just have to.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. You're right. Okay. I forgot. What have you covered so far in the academy?
Let me get my schedule out here. And I'll tell you. Right now, we're going over motor vehicle law. That's our next topic of conversation. We're actually finishing up firearms tomorrow. We've done controlled substances. We've done crime prevention techniques, where we've done like crime scene investigation, things like that. Mm-hmm. Domestic violence, driver training. That was a lot of fun. Driving cars really fast.
That was my favorite.
Fingerprinting, photographing, responding to victims, subject control and arrest techniques. Now, that was a lot of fun, too. Taking people down to the mats and handcuffing and all that good stuff.
Yep.
Juvenile law, elements of, let's see, elements of criminal law, arrest, search, and seizure, ADC laws, and communication, radio procedures. That's all the stuff that we've done so far. And we are in week 12 now.
And how long is the academy total again?
Let's see. I think it's a total of about 18 weeks, but it's weird because we have a holiday break too. So there's 2 weeks where we don't do anything at Cape Fear, but we actually have some Wilmington duties to do. Cause even though those 2 weeks at Christmas time, we have no school, but we have to be at the station for 40 hours. So we're going to do like a Christmas party and stuff like that, but we're also going to try to get our OC spray certifications, our baton, taser, all that kind of stuff done during that time. Yeah. So we can finish post faster and get on the street. I don't know. I'm weird. I'm actually looking forward to getting tased and pepper sprayed.
You're looking forward to it?
Absolutely. And I'm the president of our WPD group. So they told me that I have to take the full 5 second ride with the probes. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
It's probably going to suck, but it's all right. I'll deal.
I wasn't president of anything at the time, but they gave us the option of getting actually shot with the probes or just the little alligator clips.
Right.
And taking the full ride or just like a 2 or 3 second deal. And the taser instructor, who I, as I got to know, you know, his personality later on, was full of crap and just wanted to see somebody take the ride. And was like, oh, you know, it doesn't feel like 5 seconds. It feels like a second and a half, you know, whatever. I'm like, you know, if I'm going to do this to anyone, I want to know what it's really like. So shoot me in the back. And I regret that mistake to this day. It was not an enjoyable experience.
they said to me, usually the president is the one that's volunteered to take the full ride. And I said, that's okay. I was going to volunteer to do it anyway. So.
I would rather do pepper spray again. I know I am an outlier there, but
yeah,
the taser
did the opposite from everybody, but I haven't had either. So I'll see.
Yeah. The taser was not any fun.
But to your point, it's correct. I want to know what people go through whenever I do this to them. So right. I really want to do it.
Yeah. I just feel like that's fair. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I felt like I had to be able to say, yes, I have done the entire 5-second ride. I know how terrible it is. I would never want to, put someone through that unless it was the best thing possible for that moment. It's terrible, but it's a really effective tool too. So,
and you weren't under the influence of drugs, and so you actually felt all of it.
Yeah, exactly. I was sober. I wish they would have let me drink a little before I did that.
They're not in the right mind to deal it anyway.
Pat's asking, how are they training with the taser up here? They aren't using as first response. I'm not sure what he's getting at exactly.
Is he possibly talking about the order of weapons that you use?
Yeah.
Like first taser, then OC spray.
Yeah. He might be talking about like use of force levels.
I'm sure you can speak to that, but it's kind of subjective. It depends on the situation.
Yeah, for sure. There's some indications that tasers aren't as safe as we think they are. Some people have died, and depending on who you listen to, it's caused by excited delirium, but there's some debate about whether that's actually a thing or if that's just what the industry has made up as an excuse for basically a taser killing somebody. But they, relative to the other options, which is basically a lot of times pepper spray isn't effective in a situation where taser would be, but relative to actually physically going on hands-on and tackling and fighting with somebody, a taser is really safe in most situations and prevents a lot of injuries. So for us, tasers, when I first started, were basically, if you can go hands-on and basically physically control someone and they're not obeying commands, you can go to a taser. You don't even have to go hands-on first. It's, hey, if you're not going to do what I'm telling you to do, and I feel like if I try to go hands-on, there's something going on here and I don't feel comfortable, or I feel like you're going to get hurt or I'm going to get hurt, you could just tase them. Obviously, you tell them, you know, hey, I'm going to tase you if you don't do what I tell you to do. And usually that solved it. But by the time I left, they changed their use of force continuum to basically whatever's reasonable. But under that standard, it's the same. It's like, listen, if this guy's pretty big, I'm by myself, I'm not going to go hands-on and possibly end up shooting him because he overpowers me. I'm just going to tase him right here.
A lot of times when you put that red dot on their chest, they change their mind.
Oh, yeah. Most of the time they do.
Because they're like, oh, this is real. Yeah, I don't want that. And then some places, you know, have a policy where you can't OC and then tase because of
the fire
or whatever, you know. So
Pat said they made them. I'm not sure where he's at. He said he keeps saying up, so he's up north somewhere. They made them go through the entire thing with the probes, and he said he'd rather have pepper too. So I'm not alone. Pat likes pepper better than taser.
I will surely let you know how that goes for me.
and the question the comment he said earlier, he was getting at that they're backing off of using tasers up there where he's at. I'm assuming for the reasons that I mentioned. So we're kind of finding out that they may not be as safe as we thought they were. So I have a video that I did from Independence, Missouri, where a kid basically went into cardiac arrest after being tased for like 23 seconds, Bryce Masters. And I mean, it sounds like, I haven't done real in-depth research on it, but from what I've heard and read so far, it does sound like the taser caused it. So definitely some concerns there. But what's been the most, you said driving was the most fun. Do you have any funny stories from that? I had a blast with Evoc. It was awesome.
I have a real good one. We did this thing called the offset lane maneuver, where you have an entry set of cones, and then you have to make a very quick decision on whether to go left, go right, or go straight and stop mm-hmm. before another set of cones. And the instructor, when he told us in class, I don't know if you can see my hands here, he said, you take your arms and you cross them over like this, touch your forearms together, and go back. And if you're going left, if you're going right, you do the opposite. It's just a very quick, he says right, you do that, and then you go back. Yeah. So, and he made a huge deal about make sure you hold it 9 and 3, 9 and 3, 9 and 3. I was like, okay. So I get in the Crown Vic. All right. We're going 35 miles an hour. I hit the first set of cones and he says left. I did that and I knocked over every single cone. It was just thump, 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 thump. And he goes, all right. And then there's like 50 people on the outsides going to set the cones back up, you know? And this is, mind you, I have to back up a little bit because the guys that were in the car with me, there was three of us and an instructor. The other two guys went first and they did everything perfectly. And so I'm like, that looks easy. I got this. And then I knock all over the cones. So we go back to the course again. And 35 miles an hour, I go through the entry cones. He says, right. Boom. Same thing. Thump, 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 thump. Knock down all the cones. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? So he tells me, the instructor, he's sitting next to me. He goes, take your hands instead of 9 and 3, put them at 10 and 2, and don't go all the way. He said, make it quick, but don't go all the way and touch your arms. I did it perfectly from there on out.
Yeah.
And I was like, the guy in the classroom told me the opposite. So, you know, you can't always learn what you do in the classroom and apply it exactly.
Yeah.
But it was really funny because I took out most cones that day.
That's awesome.
But I ended up doing pretty well on the rest of the course. My favorite part was like for the first time turning the blue lights and siren on at night and chasing somebody. That was awesome.
Yeah, that is a fun first experience.
A whole lot of fun.
I'm trying to remember. We did 8 and 4, I believe. So 10 and 2 is like kind of going out when I came in the academy because when your hands are up here, you're more likely to break something when the airbag goes off, apparently. Mm-hmm. So they were having us put our hands down here, basically, which felt weird at first, but I actually like it because you have a lot of strength here because of the position your arms are in. You can kind of brace your elbows against your body, and you're using a lot of like biceps, whereas up here, your arms are extended further. So I've actually, ever since the academy, used that driving position for, like, if I take my personal car out to the track or just anything that's kind of like high spirited driving, call it that. And it works really well. It works really well for me. So,
yeah.
Not to pull.
Backing up is really fun.
Yeah.
And I actually ended up being one of the best parallel parkers because I've had so much driving experience. I'm 36. So, the 20 and 22-year-olds were, like, hitting cones everywhere, and I was, like, zipping in and out of the parallel parking spots and stuff. And they're like, how'd you do that? I said, I'm old.
I'm old. I've done this a lot.
Yes.
There was one trick that I used that helped tremendously with – I still use it. I used it before the academy, so I just applied it there for backing, which is just running your mirrors down, your side mirrors – even in the middle of the course, a timed course, the second I'm coming up to that backing up spot, I'm running my mirrors down, throw it in reverse so I can actually see my rear tire, and it's easy. As long as you can see where you're going with your mirror, it's really easy. So
we weren't allowed to use side mirrors at all.
Oh, they don't let you use side mirrors?
We just had to use windshield and back windshield, and that was it.
Huh. That's an interesting philosophy.
It's surreal.
Yeah, that's. Are you guys using Crown Vicks? I assume at the academy.
At the academy, we had one charger, and the rest were Crown Vicks. It was an older charger, and it kept overheating because we were stomping the crap out of it. But then one of the Crown Vicks lost the transmission.
Yeah.
So like, you just hit the gas, and it would just rev, and that was right in the middle of my pursuit chase. And so I come out of a fixed radius curve and I hit the gas and I hear, and it didn't go anywhere. And I was like, how am I supposed to catch a criminal if the car doesn't work? I was really ticked off.
Yeah, that's...
And the instructor looks at me, he goes, it's not the car, it's the driver. I said, bull crap, it's not.
Yeah. Pat saying 10 and 4 in Connecticut as well, and racing trains the same. Yes, that's true. I bet you you could find some places that would train lower as well. But I think you're right, Pat. As far as racing goes, too, I've seen more guys with their hands up high on the wheel. I think it's a, oh, one other trick that I used in the driving stuff, EVOC, we call it, pursuit training, whatever, emergency vehicles operations, was I threw those Crown Vics all the way down into one. And especially for the inside course, or like a more like an autocross, a cone course, not high speed stuff, I just put it in one, because that forces the car to stay in the lowest gear possible. So it doesn't, sorry, I got you on the camera just looking at me. The car will downshift when it needs to. So you're coming out of a curve or whatever you're doing, it's always got the RPMs up. And that made a huge difference. Because those Crown Vics will upshift really fast. So if you're really trying to push it, you spend half your time shifting back into a low gear every time you come back out of a corner or get back on the gas. If you put it down into one, granted, you might blow the transmission or the engine, but you'll get a better lap time. And I hold the record at my academy. So yeah, it was worth it. It was worth it.
Actually, the Crown Vics were not bad to drive. I actually enjoyed them.
No,
the Chargers are fun. They just sound mean.
Yeah, no, the Charger is fun if you have room to run, but if you're talking like cone courses and we call it slow speed stuff, but stuff where it's stop and go fast,
yeah,
the Crown Vic is way more fun because you can, it has a lot of body roll. Go ahead.
Well, the ABS on the Charger is terrible. It increases stopping distance so much.
Yeah. And their transmissions are terrible. So
yeah.
The Chargers, yes, Pat, the Chargers are hard to see out of. That's the other problem they have.
Lots of blind spots.
What's been the most challenging thing that you've gone through?
Just doing a different career, because I was a teacher for 11 years. And so just making a transition to this is something new, and I'm 36 years old. So that's just been the hardest thing. But it's exciting at the same time because it's different.
Being a teacher and just your general life experience, though, you're 36, you say you're the oldest one in your academy. How do you feel like that has prepared you for what you're doing now?
There's a lot of instructors that are my age or younger that I talk to, and like we share a life experience, so that helps. The person that recruited me from WPD is exactly my age, and he's been an officer for 10 years. So we have gotten a good relationship because we, you know, we can relate to each other.
Right.
I'm a lot more mature, I would think, than the younger kids in the class. And so I, like, a lot of them are kind of, you know, antsy about doing things and have their cell phones out and doing whatever. And I'm just, like, intensely focused, you know, because I know this is for real for me. So it's not an option not to pass this and not to do well. So that's,
right,
I think that's a difference for me.
Just kind of wrapping up, what, back to that question that you asked me, what should I expect? What would you say to someone that wants to get into law enforcement? Because I know I have a few people that listen to the podcast, watch this show, who want to be cops or are soon to be, as you were when you emailed me. So give, say, two words of wisdom. If you have more, that's fine, but of the most important things that you feel like are important for them to think about or prepare for going into an academy experience?
Well, in terms of, I guess, something a little bit different, but so, or along the same lines, even at the academy, but mostly if you're getting hired by an agency, be professional. Show up in a shirt and tie and, you know, in a suit or a dress if you're a girl, you know, like make sure you look presentable. Make sure that you are manners all the time. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. It goes a really long way because, you know, you're making impressions all the time. When you're at the academy, you're interviewing every day. All the instructors that you have for the first time are looking at you as if it's their first time and saying this person's good or not good. And so you have to always make those good impressions. You always have to be on your A game. Even if you're sitting there just learning for 4 hours and listening to a lecture, always be professional and always remain in control of what you're doing because you never know if it's going to be taken from you. I'm a probationary hire. I'm a trainee. And they say, this is a conditional job offer. I have no guarantee of a job until I graduate and they swear me in. Mm-hmm. So I'm always, you know, on guard to make sure I'm doing everything the right way. Right. So just be professional, stay on top of your academics. It's not that hard if you study, if you work hard. I don't study more than 30 minutes for each test, but, you know, just paying attention, that's the big thing. Just being a normal person, paying attention and really staying on top of things.
Right. Was that one thing or is that two? I lost track.
We can make it two, but I mean,
that was a long one. So,
yeah.
But I second that. And kind of what that boils down to is treat it like you're in the military.
Yes.
Even if your academy is not militaristic, you are in law enforcement or you're coming into a culture that is still, typically structured like a military hierarchy. And a lot of people that matter as far as getting hired, who you're going to work for, who's going to promote you, who's going to pass you on the test, have a more militaristic experience or ideology. They are going to expect that you're at a minimum 10 minutes early, because if you're 10 minutes early, you're on time. They're going to expect your stuff to look clean and pressed and shiny and whatever. You're right. You can't slack. You have to stay on top of stuff. It's not rocket science. Any average intelligence person can pass the academy as long as they try. You pay attention, you try, and don't be a goofball. You can have fun, but you have to be a professional because right. You're going to go out and do a job that's really important, and you're always going to be on camera. If you can't be professional now, then how can they trust you in that uniform?
And so. The other thing is, you remember, you're a public servant. You're doing this because you're in service. You want to serve people.
Right.
It's not about you. It's about everybody else and making a difference in your community. And that's such a cliche answer, but it's the truth. I wouldn't do this if I thought, oh, I'm going to, you know, look good in uniform and I get to shoot a gun and stuff like that. Yeah, those are perks and that's cool, but it's not what it's about. It's about serving other people and making your community a better place to live.
Yeah, exactly.
Keeping that in sight, you know?
Right. I don't think I mentioned this before, and I'll close with this, but Kristen is actually doing about weekly video logs of his experience at the academy. And when those are all done and he's all the way through, at some point I'll have those all put together and I'll put them on the channel for you guys to see. So, he's been doing that for me, which is awesome. I haven't, in all honesty, gotten through all of them yet. But so no promises on what's going to be in there. Maybe a surprise box, but, you get to see more of Kristen later when we get through all those, but thank you for doing those. I think it's going to be pretty cool to be able to see that progression.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Any last words?
If you're thinking about getting into law enforcement, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons and make sure that you know exactly what you're getting into. And make sure if you get into it and you realize it's not for you, that you get out of it. I've had a couple people drop out of class in the last week after failing certain things and not qualifying and doing whatever, just realizing, hey, this is not for me. I need to get out of it. So knowing that time to get out is important too.
Right. And rare.
Yeah.
I think, that's my experience as well. A lot of people that thought it was one thing and it's not. And, you know, sometimes it's, I know that, not speaking to you, but speaking to anyone watching or listening, it is a career. And that's what civilians don't understand, that cops, they're paying their bills. So it's a job too. In a lot of ways, it is just a job for some people, but it's more than a job. And if it has become just a job and it's not something where you can honestly go and say that you're there to serve, you're there to help people, you're there to make your community a better place, then it's probably time to start looking for another career. And that probably does not sit well with a lot. If there were 1,000 cops listening, I'd have about 500 emails, people saying, you can't say that. Well, no, I can. And you probably need to find a new career. If that pisses you off and you're in law enforcement, go do something else, because that's your job, whether you like it or not. All right, man. Well, thanks for doing this. What is it? An hour and 20 minutes out of your night. Appreciate it. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Got a couple comments. All right. Yep. We'll end with that. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see you next time.
All right.
Bye. That's it for this one, ladies and gents. Thank you so much for listening and for the emails you guys have been sending me, the donations, all of your support. Love it. Thank you. I can't say enough or in the right words to convey how much that all means to me. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you have questions for me or for Kristen about the Police Academy or show suggestions, you want to share your stories, whatever it is, you can send those to policeacademypodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can always talk to me on Twitter, Facebook, or the YouTube channel, which, as I mentioned earlier, will begin probably, I'm 85% sure at this point, I'm going to start doing live streams once a week, so anyone in the world can ask a cop a question if they want to during that time. I will let you know when that's going to be. But if you haven't done so, go check out the YouTube channel. Just pull up a web browser, go to YouTube, and then type in Police Academy Podcast, and you will find my channel. You can subscribe so you know when those live streams are coming out, and you are in touch with my visual side. I call the podcast the dark side, so I don't know what the YouTube channel is. I guess it's the light side, because I have to use lights and cameras and all that stuff to make me look pretty. So go check it out. YouTube, Police Academy Podcast. I will see you guys next time. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.